Find the thing that you love. Most people have got this one type of photography. So I like street photography, but it's not filling me with passion. So for me, being on my own in low light by the ocean is kind of my, or on the top of a mountain, and then follow that sort of and perfect it. So find out how to be a kind of really adept portrait photographer, learn about that style if that's what you love, and then move on to the next one. If you're trying to do everything, especially on one trip, if you try to cover everything, you'll be chasing your tail and you'll never really get probably anything that's really amazing. You'll get lots of quite nice things. So don't be kind of tempted to do everything.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast, where each week we interview the world's most interesting photographers to learn what it really takes to capture beautiful images and compelling stories so that you can start to do the same. Welcome back, photo friends. Today we have travel photographer Nurai Gemmell, who is going to share her best tips for taking better travel photography. Score. But before we get on into today's episode, I want to give a huge shout out to fellow Beginner Photography Podcast community member JRay04 for leaving the podcast a 5-star Apple Podcast rating and review. JRay says, I typically do not write reviews, but this podcast has influenced me so much in my photography journey that I felt obligated to let others know. I've learned so much in a short amount of time that I am consistently being inspired to get out and shoot more. Raymond is a talented interviewer, thank you so much, and I usually get something out of every episode, whether it is technical knowledge or a good dose of motivation. The community that has risen out of this podcast is an anomaly in itself. I am a member of a few photography groups, but this one is the most encouraging and respectful. Whoa, JRay, man, thank you so much for taking the time to, you know, go out of your way to leave the podcast a review. And what a review it was. I am glad that you are taking what you hear and implementing it into your photography. So many people can hear things and learn things, but they don't do anything with it. So the fact that you are implementing it into your photography is amazing. And couple that with being active in the Beginner Photography Podcast community to get feedback and answers on your questions. Well, that is the path to growth right there. To all of you other photo friends, if you are not a part of the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook community, come join today by searching Facebook for Beginner Photography Podcast or clicking the link on the homepage of beginnerphotographypodcast.com, because we would love to have you. Now, today's guest is Nurai Gemmell, who is a Nat Geo photographer whose job it is to travel and take photos. So when it comes to knowing which photos to capture on a trip, Nurai has the answers. In fact, she wrote the book on it. Her book is called The Travel Photographer's Way: Practical Steps to Taking Unforgettable Travel Photos. Sounds perfect, right? In this interview, Nurai shares how to best prep for an upcoming trip to ensure that you get the photos that you want, the missing element Nurai notices when seeing amateur photographers post their travel photos online, and how variety is the key to having a successful photo trip. Lots to learn here. With that, let's not wait anymore. Let's just go ahead and get on into today's podcast interview with Nurai Gemmell. Nurai, when did you know that photography was going to play an important role in your life?
Okay, so I guess for me, 2008, 2009 was kind of a sort of pivotal time in my life. I was living in South America and traveling a lot. And I'd been taking photographs for a long time, but kind of sort of everything sort of ramped up a little bit then. And someone was saying, oh, you know, you're really good, you should enter some competitions. And I was like, oh, you know, I was teaching English in a British school in Santiago in Chile. And I entered a few different competitions and I came second in two of them. I won one of them. And it was kind of like, oh, one was in Canada, one was in Australia, one was in the UK, or two in the UK. And I was kind of like, oh, maybe, you know, and that's kind of where I got a bit more confidence and carried on, and it started to become a thing that was professional rather than just me, you know, fooling around. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and it took a few years to kind of get there, but that was the sort of, you know, the germ of everything starting.
So yeah. How do you, let me just try to clarify here. So you decided to get into photography, and then we kind of jumped into you started winning awards. So, like, what was
it? Well, no, so I'd always had a camera from a child, you know, and I've always loved photography and painting and art, anything kind of visual I was doing. But I'm quite wordy, so I have an English degree, and I was always reading, but I love to paint. I never ever thought that photography would be anything in a career for me, because my first job was in publishing. I was a copywriter. I became a teacher of English and drama. So it was, you know, it was all kind of academic and publishing. But I loved it. It was my kind of, you know, letting off steam thing to go out with a camera. And so I'd had a film SLR camera for a long time. And was taking, I thought, quite good photos, which, you know, I used for, you know, a lot of people do, you know, put on your own wall or use for whatever, calendars or just to look at. And so there was probably 10 years where I was becoming quite good at it, but it still wasn't something I wanted to earn money from. Mm-hmm. I was the head of English in a British school, and I was, you know, had a kind of busy job, and I was doing some consultancy work as well. So it was the thing I did. And I meet a lot of photographers on trips who are dentists and solicitors, and they've got their thing, they've got their job, but they just love photography. So I was there for a while like that. So it was a gradual thing, and I didn't just start entering awards. That sounds kind of like, oh, I'm so good, I'm going to do this. But it was kind of, I was doing some photography for the school I was working at. Every time I went on a trip with students in South America, you know, they'd ask me, can you supply some pictures for the newsletter for the, you know, and so it came sort of slowly like that. And then there was an exhibition and I put some photos in and everyone would say, oh, yours are really good. They're better than the professional guy that I'm like, no. So it was kind of like that. It was a genesis. And then I just entered in the same year, just a few, just randomly. And they all came back with like shortlists, and I won a load of equipment from one Canadian one, and yeah. And then I entered again the next year, the same one in the UK called Wanderlust, and I came second. And then the next year I won, and then they sent me on a commission. That was the real beginning. That was 2010.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah.
Before we dive into that, where it turns professional, I'm always interested in those earliest days of photography because as long as photography's been around, because that's not true, but there's for a long time there's been kind of two subsets of photographers. Those like my mom growing up, who, you know, the point and shoot was perfect. That's all that she needed. And today, that's the iPhone photographers, right? Just a snapshot, record this, we're good. But you mentioned that you had an SLR there. That's going to be, at least in film, going to be full manual controls.
Yeah.
What was it about photography? What was it about, you know, that SLR and having more control that you desired more so than just taking snapshots? Or I guess, let me rephrase that. What is it about snapshots that wasn't good enough for you? Are you ready to transform your love for photography into profit? Imagine capturing beautiful moments while bringing in a little extra money for your family each month. Sound too good to be true? With CloudSpot, it's not just a dream. Designed by photographers for photographers, CloudSpot simplifies your business. Effortlessly organize shoots, send professional contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and enjoy faster payment payouts with the lowest fees in the industry, including PayPal. Forget lost emails and messy spreadsheets. CloudSpot offers a streamlined workflow, letting you focus on the moment. And here is the clincher. Grab your free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com and you'll get access to my personal wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires. So don't let uncertainty hold you back. Embrace the future of photography business management with CloudSpot Studio. Sign up at deliverphotos.com today and transform your passion into profit.
Well, I guess then when I was doing it, we didn't have the iPhones, you know, the Samsungs that we've got now, which are taking HDR pictures, which are compressing and exposing perfectly. So you would have overexposed skies. You know, you try to shoot a sunset and it wouldn't be the right color. Mm-hmm. And you think it didn't look like that. And it was that kind of learning how to control what you wanted. I really started out doing landscape photography. So for me, being able to sort of use a tripod and use filters and, you know, block out some of the sky and have a long exposure, that kind of thing. You can't do that with a phone.
Sure.
Or a, and I did have one of those cameras a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
But my dad also had a really nice old Agfa 35mm film camera when I was really small. And I used to covet it. I don't know what it was made, but it was a brown leather case, which is weird because I got this this Fuji that I use.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, this retro sort of styling. And I don't know if that's why I love this camera. I mean, it's good as well, but it reminds me of my dad's camera. So I think sometimes it's kind of childhood things, being trusted with the nice camera, getting to use it a few times. And those pictures that we took on his camera were so much better than my little first. I had a little kind of Helena or something. And then I got an Olympus Compact, and then I had, and I kept moving up. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it was control. It's sort of knowing that it wasn't quite doing what I wanted it to do, that I moved on to buying an SLR and not really knowing what to do with it, but it was even on auto, it was taking great pictures.
Of course, yeah. There's always that jump. Yeah. It's so funny, from like snapshots to anything better is like a giant step forward. But then from that to really professional photos, it's a lot smaller of a jump. It's just more technical, I think, and more detailed than that. So you said that you were having problems, or that it was that still you were shooting on auto. When you first started, you know, learning to control your camera and all of the controls that it had to be able to get the image that you saw in your head on film or in your camera, what were some of those earliest struggles for you from a technical standpoint?
I mean, I guess for me, I think when you first start taking photographs, there's usually somebody around you who knows what they're doing or wants to tell you how to do it. And I find when I'm teaching photography as well, in my book, which I know we're going to talk about later, but I think you have to learn things when you need to learn them. So for me, it's always about context. So if you're trying to do something and it's not working, you figure it out how to do it, or you go on a course or someone teaches you. If you get given a load of technical information when you're not ready for it, or when it's just not you, because also you're being creative, aren't you? And you're in the moment and you're traveling, especially with landscapes. You don't want someone on your shoulder going, nah, put it on F11 and underexposed by third and try this. And you're like, oh, but you just ruined it. I was looking at this amazing landscape in front of me.
Sure.
So I didn't find anything particularly hard, but I didn't all, I wasn't always, it's one particular person I'm thinking of was always trying to tell me things because he'd studied photography and I wasn't ready to hear it. So I was probably not very welcoming of his help. And he talks to me about it now. I said, do you remember when I tried to talk to you? And I was like, yeah, I don't want to know. Let me do it in my own time. So I think nothing was hard, but there is quite a lot. And I think you need to learn it when you're ready and in context and kind of experience it. So be in the field. And say to someone, you know, this is awful. What's wrong with my picture? Why is it so bad? And they'll say, have you, you know, it's overexposed, or the sky's just too bright. You've got no pixels in the sky. And you're like, oh, okay. And they'll say it's exposure. And you go, oh, yeah, I need to go and work out what the exposure triangle is. Mm-hmm. And you do, you learn it. And that's how I teach. When I do some tours, mostly in South America now, in Patagonia. And I get some people turning up with really good cameras, but they've never used them before.
Sure. That's frustrating.
Yeah. But you know what? It's amazing how quickly, because they're there and they're like, oh, I want to get a picture like this. And they go, what am I doing? And you go, so, you know, teach them how to use the histogram and what they're looking for with light and dark and just what dynamic range is and that kind of thing. And then when they've got that, they start looking at, you know, should I shoot aperture or shutter, or what's manual and how do I get control? And I saw a woman in February in Chile go from really zero, knowing very, you know, she didn't know anything actually. By the end of a week, honestly, she was like that. I was like, wow. And she had a really good brand new Sony. So I was a little bit jealous and I was like, oh. But she kept saying, I'm really bad. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm like, well, you know, I think it's the desire to know, isn't it? And then having someone who can help you or somewhere to look. And now you've got Google, so you don't really need a teacher.
No, that's not true.
Well, you know.
I think the hardest part, though, you know, especially for new photographers, is that, you know, say back 30 years ago, we're shooting on film. You got your ISO. Well, actually, you have your film speed. So, like, that's not going to change. You have your shutter speed. You have your aperture. And then maybe, you know, lenses. You got to learn about lenses. And there's really not much more to that until you get into printing and filters, possibly. But today, there's just so many buttons and settings and all these things on your camera, it can be really difficult. So if somebody brand new, you know, let's take this woman here with this brand new Sony camera. She was at zero. What would you tell her is the most important thing to focus on first?
Well, we sort of started with chats about composition and what makes a good photo. And, you know, I showed them some of my stuff and people that I admire. And so I'm just talking about the basics and then seeing what they all had as equipment, because there's a group of them. Mm-hmm. And then obviously she had a really good camera. So talking to her about, I always really start with aperture priority, because I think you can kind of just, you know, get started with just explaining light and then thinking about if you want things in focus and, you know, and then also points of view, you know, angles. Are you going to get low on the ground? Are you going to kind of try and get some kind of different angle on something? And then just playing with composition. So she had a good eye, but she wasn't quite sure how to control the light. And so she started to sort of work in aperture priority for a while, and then maybe underexposing a little bit. And then the next day we kind of looked at the histogram a little bit and talked about trying to get sort of motion and, you know, slowing down the shutter and talking about what that meant and how that linked to aperture. And she just picked it up. You know, she was obviously, you know, ready for it. And she'd been a photographer. She'd always had a camera, but she'd never really tried to control it. But she knew what she knew what looked good, and she knew what she wanted her photos to look like. And she'd researched where she was going. That's a big thing too. You know, if you have an idea of what you can do when you get somewhere, if you're going to Antarctica, you know what you're going to face, right? So she didn't want to miss the opportunity. So, Also, I was on board and she didn't know there was a photographer on board because they hadn't told her when she'd booked her trip. So she was quite excited. Yeah. So she was by my side the whole time.
So obviously having some sort of eye, right, developing that over a while, like that is really important. But what really grew her skills in this situation was having that dedicated time to actually work with her camera and capture those photos, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we had workshops and chats in the day, and in the evening we kind of shared photographs. The next day, so there, it was dedicated. And I've done that myself. When I started out, I used to go on, I went on so many photography tours that I could, anything I could get onto. Mm-hmm. And you're always with other photographers. Either they're beginners and they love it, or they're more experienced than you, and you really learn a lot by what you call proximal learning. Mm-hmm. It's who you're standing next to. And there was one Canadian guy, Dan Bannister, who I learned so much from. He's such a nice guy as well. And I think I learned a lot from him, more than I did on courses that I've taken. Just because he'd say, you know, even he used to say, slow. He'd hear my shutter and go, that's going to be blurred. And I'd be like, what? I don't do it out loud to people because I'm not that kind of out there. I don't want to be that rude to somebody. But I do hear it and I think, oh, how, you know, what's your shutter speed, you know? Yeah.
That's too funny.
Yeah.
It's funny how, you know, as time goes on and you learn more about these things, you can pick up on those really small things that are very difficult when you first get started.
Yeah.
Now, I know that today you shoot, you do a lot of travel photography. You've written a book about it, which we're going to get into. But before we do get into that, you mentioned, you know, winning some awards earlier, doing some commissioned work. Is that how you got into travel photography in the first place?
Yeah, I think when I won the first kind of the main award that I won, which is Wanderlust magazine, which is quite a big magazine in the UK. It's like one of the leading travel magazines. They have a big exhibition every year of the winners of those competitions, and they put your work up at something called Destinations, which is a big travel fair. It happens every February in the UK, in London, I should say, and Manchester. And so going on commission for them, I then had my work in their magazine. And there were a few events around that. So that kind of gave me the confidence to pitch for work. So after that, I started sort of coming up with ideas for things I wanted to photograph, and a few magazines. I got a few commissions quite soon on the back of that. And then I did some work because I used to live in Chile. Mm-hmm. I was doing some work with something called LATA, which is the Latin American Travel Association. And they kind of have a fundraising arm that works with charities in South America. And I started volunteering with them, doing some work for them. So I used to get involved in quite a lot of Latin American events. And I was at something and I was talking to somebody who I didn't know who she was, but we swapped cards. And she worked in the design team at National Geographic Traveller magazine in London. And she passed my card on to the art director, and he must have looked me up, and then he emailed me, and then I got some commissions with them. So then I started working with Nat Geo a lot, and I still do. So that was kind of just by being in that, you know, network, and just keep on sort of like pitching stuff and talking to people and going to events. But I realize not everyone can do that. I live in London, so, you know, but it wasn't straight away. It took a few years for me to sort of build that network. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I bet that email from Nat Geo must have been quite something to read. Hey, Raymond here, and I know that diving into the world of editing can feel like navigating a maze, especially if you're just starting out. So that's why I created our exclusive collection of 52 Lightroom presets, absolutely free. While presets can dramatically enhance your photos, they're not a one-click solution. They're a starting point for your creativity and an opportunity to learn and grow in your editing skills. These presets work seamlessly with all versions of Lightroom, whether you're on a computer or using Lightroom Mobile. And they're designed to simplify your editing process, adding that professional touch to your photos while giving you the flexibility to fine-tune them to your taste. So if you're ready to take your photos to the next level, head over to freephotographypresets.com right now and get editing today.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like, I didn't even like, sometimes that's why people say, how do you get into it? I get a lot of emails when I do events for National Geographic Traveller and the like masterclasses that we do. I get a lot of messages afterwards saying, oh, how do you get into travel photography? And it's strange. And last night I was having dinner with the company that I work for in Chile. Is called Australis Expeditions. And I was having dinner with one of their, well, the guy that books me basically, who lives in Barcelona, but I've known him for quite a few years now, but he was in London doing some marketing and PR stuff. And so we went for dinner, and I was saying to him that, you know, people have said to me, how do you get that gig? How do you? And it's because I was working in South America for a long time, and I speak Spanish, and I kind of, you know, have I'm simpatica for Chile. I kind of have that in me because I live there. And so they like me because of that. I didn't just say, oh, can you employ me? And it was a process. So I always say to people, follow what you love, keep doing it. It will come to you. If you love something and you've got a little bit of skill and you just keep working at it, you will get the opportunity somehow. But if you're really pushy and you're banging on doors, I think you can alienate people. So I've never really been that person. However, I do know people like that and they're doing well. It's just not me. So I just kind of wait for it to come to me. I guess, you know, maybe it would have come sooner if I was a bit more forthcoming, but, you know.
But you're here today, so that's...
I'm here today.
Exactly. Well, let's go ahead and start there then. Why don't you first tell us about your book, The Travel Photographer's Way. This is a very exciting book. Tell me kind of what it's about and what goes into it.
Okay. You know what I like is that your background is the color scheme of my cover. So yeah, we like that. We're sort of color palatting there. The idea of the book was kind of what we've been talking about, is learning in a kind of progressive way. And so when I started out, I did buy quite a lot of photography books. Some of them were like the big coffee table books, you know, just lush pictures. And you're like, I want to go there and take that picture. And some of them were technical books. And I found with the technical books, they're okay to dip into. You kind of look in and see and think, oh, yeah, how do you do that? Oh, right, this is a good example. I didn't want to do that kind of book that was heavily loaded or top loaded with technical information. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to be a travel guide. So each chapter is a different continent and each chapter is a different type of travel photography. And it's all the stuff that I have to do when I'm working. So, you know, we love wow shots as travel photographers and we love those opening double page spreads of a, you know, big Northern Lights landscape or something.
Yes.
But photo editors don't just want those. They might open the feature with that, but then they want a cup of coffee or someone eating or, you know, a bar at night and then people in the sunshine enjoying the beach, that kind of thing. So you have to shoot a range of stuff. So I thought 7 continents, 7 types of travel photography, kind of moving from people and landscape to food and adventure, etc. And then each chapter gets progressively more difficult technically. So kind of starts with what we were talking about, composition, you know, shooting people, the relationships, how you work with people if you're traveling. Because it's very different to studio photography. Mm-hmm. You know, you're on the go and you might see somebody. How do you, you know, there's all that stuff about how you encounter people and how you get a good photograph on the move. And it kind of starts with using aperture priority, and then it goes into like wildlife photography. So it's, it gets into shutter speed a bit more, then manual photography, and then, you know, all the kind of stuff to do with composite photographs and exposure compensation and the more technical. So if you read it from cover to cover, you travel around the world, and hopefully by the end of it, you're quite a competent photographer without really thinking about it. And each chapter has assignments. So there's a couple of things and they're quite basic to start with. And the next one's a bit more difficult. And there's reflections, you know, what might have gone wrong and why. I wish, I mean, I know it sounds awful, but it's not really. I wish I'd read it when I was starting out. I think it would have been a really nice book because you could travel with it. It's small. It's not, you know, it's not meant to be a big, the ones I've got,
yeah,
or a big reference book, because you won't travel with it. So there's a bunch of photos in it. There's like 200 photos. But I also interview one photographer that I really admire in each chapter, like this guy, Harry, who's the most amazing wildlife photographer. And he really just focuses on wildlife.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And he does big fine art kind of exhibitions. And I love his work. So each chapter, there's another one of his. Each chapter, yeah. Each chapter has a different, yeah, it is, isn't it? So I interviewed 10 photographers. And so each chapter has a little sort of section with them, and it builds on what I've been saying. I didn't want it just to be my voice, because it's like, what do I know? You know, I know what I know. Although the book is also full of other people's voices. So it's full of quotations from photographers, philosophers. And I've been a teacher for a long time. So the way people learn is kind of key to my other career. Mm-hmm. And so that is in there as well. So I even got Nietzsche in saying, you know, Friedrich Nietzsche, that we're not born genius. We kind of incrementally become really skillful if it's what we want. And it's that journey to becoming a genius that makes, you know, composers and virtuoso violinists, etc. And I like that.
Well, yeah.
Like you say, how do you get what you've got? And you know, well, time and passion. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And opportunity, you know, not everyone can afford a big fat camera. I know that.
Right.
So, you know.
Hey, Raymond here, and we will get back to the show in just a moment. Let me ask you, were you happy with your photos when you were just taking snapshots with your phone or a point-and-shoot camera? Of course not. You wanted to unleash your creativity and capture the world with your unique vision. That's why you bought a DSLR. My free ebook, 46 Free Creative Photography Ideas, is built on that premise of taking ordinary ideas and using your creativity to make something uniquely your own. That ability to think outside of the box is what makes world-class photographers so successful. It's not their camera gear or their fancy lenses, but it's their ability to come up with a creative idea and execute. So download your free copy of 46 Creative Photo Ideas now by heading over to creativeimageideas.com. That is creativeimageideas.com. Now, let's go ahead and get back on into today's interview. Yeah, that's a big part of it. It's interesting because, you know, I'm kind of in a similar situation as you, where it's like, you know, what do I know? Like, I want to talk to others. I want to hear what they know, you know,
yeah.
And I want to be able to learn from them, because oftentimes I don't have either the time or the money, because of family or just life, work, whatever, to be able to travel to these places. But being able to hear others like yourself who have, and still being able to gain that insight is really important. Now for the rest of this interview, I have a series of questions, but they kind of depend. They're kind of specific to like being on a trip. So for the sake of this example, can you tell me about maybe your most recent trip? Where did you go?
Most recent trip was Australia.
Okay.
Although I have to say it was mostly to see family. I wasn't working I wasn't commissioned to go to Australia. It was me going back to see my parents after 2 years of not seeing them during the pandemic. But in February I was in Chile.
Okay.
And that was that. Yeah. And that was teaching photography on board an expedition ship.
Okay, so let's use that as an example.
Okay.
Going down to Chile. I know that, as you mentioned earlier, you know, you find out that you're going to go to one of these places. The prep work that you do is really important. You want to know kind of what you're getting into so that you have an idea of what, you know, you can photograph and whatnot. So for you, when you found out that you were going to Chile, what is the first thing that you did in terms of planning for your trip and ensuring that you get photos that you're happy with?
I guess because I've done this trip a few times, I know the south of Chile, so it's a bit easier for me in that I've got the right equipment for that. I've got the right cold weather gear. You know, I know what I need. But I guess after 2 years of being in a pandemic, I'm making sure my cameras all work. I have to say, a couple of them were a bit kind of in need of repair. But my basic kit was all good. So first thing I do is just go through my equipment, clean it all, get it cleaned professionally if it needs it, make sure it's working. But a lot of what I need for Chile is, you know, I've got a good carbon fiber tripod. I have all the sort of waterproof bags for everything and, you know, having enough batteries so that in the cold I don't run out of batteries and energy, et cetera, enough cards. Mm-hmm. So basically it's just going through. I've got a checklist and I just go through everything and check I've got everything. And obviously I was just talking to somebody recently who's gone to South America and she was asking me, you know, what do I leave behind? It's a lot of stuff I want to take and you can't take everything. So if you know you're going somewhere with wildlife, so if this was Antarctica, this trip, I would have taken a different lens or two, but I knew that where I was going was mostly big, wide landscapes and maybe some more kind of mid-range stuff. So I didn't take a really big telephoto because it's heavy and I didn't really need it. So it's that, but it's sort of deciding. So if I'm going somewhere I know, it's easy. If it's somewhere I haven't been before, but it's a certain job, I know there's maybe a lot of portraits I need to take. If it's a food story, then I start thinking about what lenses, what camera bodies. I always take a backup. Do I take a compact as well? Do I need to kind of, you know, fly under the radar a little bit in the street and do some street photography, in which case I will take a compact or a range, a mirrorless type thing, rangefinder. But for Chile, it was on board, so it was big camera equipment, tripod, etc., some sort of GoPro type stuff for the wet, you know, all that.
Of course, yeah, GoPros are fantastic for stuff like that.
Yeah.
So to find out if a place is, you know, more street or more, you know, landscape, how do you do your research to discover those things?
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of photographers that I interview for the book as well, we all seem to have the same process. You know, start with a Google search, sort of have a look at where you're going. Picture libraries, photo libraries, where, you know, like Getty, that kind of thing, and look at what other pro photographers have shot. If there's any kind of magazine features online, I always have a look at those and just to see what someone else has shot, partly to do something a bit different as well. You don't want to be reproducing what someone else just did for a different magazine. I mean, in the old days, you used to arrive somewhere, and I know a lot of photographers used to go to the local sort of tourist shop and look at all the postcards and sort of say, oh, yeah, that's the picture I want. Yeah. And again, people will say, yeah, but you don't want to get the same thing as someone else. But you want to know what's there, right? So a range of, like, I mean, now it's easy with online stuff. I'll also look at things like, you know, things you mustn't miss when you go somewhere. So if it's a city break type thing, I'll look at someone's travel article. It might say 7 things to do in Copenhagen and sort of make sure I know my stuff. I do also read guidebooks. So, like, I'm going to flag myself up here because I wrote a chapter of this, Rough Guide to Australia. Mm-hmm. So books like this are really good for getting the highlights from a writer's point of view. And that sometimes photographers miss things because of that. And then, you know, there's an app called the Photographer's Ephemeris, which tells you sunset and sunrise times, which is always obviously important for landscape photography and getting good light. I check the weather. I decide where to stay based on what I think I'm going to be photographing more so I can get somewhere at night or early in the morning without having to schlep, you know, too far. But yeah, and then if I can, this is my big thing, is stay somewhere for longer if you can. So when you get a job, usually if it's a commission thing for a magazine, you might get a couple of days paid for by the tourist board or PR. They'll give you a couple of nights in a hotel and the flight. It's fine if you're doing a quick kind of, interview research project, but if you're trying to get, I don't know, three, four locations at sunset and this and that and interview this guy, you can't do it in, what, 2 days, especially if
Sure.
you're landing on one of them. So it's trying to sort of make sure you've got the time to get the photographs you need. So once you've done the research, then I start trying to sort of work out how long I need to be somewhere. So it's kind of, it's a lot of prep. It's a lot of
Yeah.
negotiation and time.
Yeah. Okay. So that perfectly segues into the next question, which is, I guess, how do you know exactly what photos you need to capture?
I do a storyboard. So I mean, if you're, let's say you're illustrating someone else's article, which I have done before, and they'll send me the text. So I'll go through and annotate it, and I'll think, okay, well, that would be a good opener. I mean, you don't always get exactly the shots you think you're going to take,
Of
but
course.
I mean, I've got it in my book somewhere. I don't know where it is. But this is sort of chapter 11 of the book, is sort of what you do when you get back home. And it kind of references back to the storyboards because when before you go, I always plan. So there's somewhere, I haven't looked at this for a while, actually. I shouldn't admit that. I use planning sheets, shot lists, and storyboards. I teach film now to students. And so before they go and shoot film, yes, I hear they are. So like you have a kind of day sheet for where you're going to be and what you need to do, what time you need to be there. So I kind of start with that. And sometimes I'll illustrate that, when I'm on a train or a plane, I'll start imagining the shot. So lots of photographers talk about pre-visualization. If you've done your research, if you've really thought about a place and you're like, I know what I want to capture when I get there, and that could be the opening shot. And then I write a series of shots that I think I should get that could be that shot. So they're going to be landscape, there's going to be enough negative space for text, and I hope that the photo editor likes it enough to use it. Similarly, trying to shoot the cover of a magazine, so thinking about shooting a vertical with enough room for them to put National Geographic Traveller at the top, that kind of thing. I have to say that's not something I do a lot. But like this, my book, that's actually a landscape photo, but the designer wanted to use it on the cover, so she cropped it. And obviously it does work quite nicely, but I didn't shoot it that way because there was a lot going on at the sides. So that's kind of something I say in the book as well, is if you want to work as a travel photographer, you do have to shoot vertical and landscape. You do have to have all the options that you can offer, because photo editors will also always say, do you have any more shots of people on bikes in the street, or do you have that as a vertical? And you're like, if you didn't shoot it and you say no, that kind of becomes a problem.
I see.
So preparing in advance, writing a shot list, making sure you've got people, animals, food, landscape, early morning, late evening, something tranquil, something wow, and sort of just something that captures the place. So if the story is, I don't know, coffee in Manizales in Colombia, if you're doing a coffee story, you've got to get the beans, right? You've got to get the field and the worker. You need someone drinking the coffee, So you start mapping it like that, like you would if you're writing a story. So journalists do the same thing, kind of think about,
Yes. Now that concept right there, I think you just kind of breezed over that, probably because you've been doing this for so long. But this idea of that our photos are just a way to tell a story, right? And that there has to be some sort of beginning, middle, and end, right? The beans growing, the beans being ground up, and whatever, and then the coffee finally being drank. But for Let's maybe think about maybe somebody's going on vacation, right? Maybe they're going down to Chile, and they know that they're going to be there for a few days. How do we craft a story out of that? Do we have to manufacture something, or is there a way to be more I don't want to say is there a way to be more organic with the photos that we capture, but are still able to capture a story?
I mean, there's so much spontaneity, isn't there, in travel? You don't
Yes.
know what's coming, and if you're always sticking to the plan, then you're going to miss so much. So that's why having extra time in a place is great. Getting lost in a place is really good. Just wandering, and talking to people, because you'll find stuff out that you didn't know existed. So I always get stories when I'm on location. Someone will tell me something, and I'll go, oh, that would be a really good story for that magazine, or I'll research that when I get home and I'll try and come back. If I'm going to run out of time, I'll try and come back and shoot that later. So yeah, I think if you've got an idea of what you'd like to photograph, but then you sort of are also agile, so you need to react to what's there, and yeah, be on your toes.
Miss
a few dinners, you know. You can't be having dinner with the folks every time the sun's setting. You need to be out looking, you know, is it better over this way? Do I need to get to the top? You know, you asked me about research. Always find out where the, if you're in a city, where the, you know, where the high buildings are, the rooftops with the views of the city, that kind of thing. And choose to have your dinner and your drinks in one of those, in that, you know, during, I always do that, you know, because then you kind of, that's where you end up getting something really interesting.
Sure.
And talk to people, because you get the portraits. You're never going to get a good portrait unless you've set up an interview in advance and they know you're coming. If you just stop for 10 seconds and say, can I take your photo? People are kind of like, But if you're around for a bit and you talk to them, they relax with you, and then you take the photograph, you tend to get a nicer portrait. So yeah, you know, yeah, react to what's there when you get there, and be agile and sort of think, what are the possibilities? But then think, oh, could I go down this avenue with it? I think there's a little bit of luck involved in getting a good story sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, I think the more you do it, the more you create that luck, because you know what, how to sort of like create the alchemy for it to happen.
Ah.
Yeah. So you need to be the good person in the right place with the right equipment if it does come about. And then look at your, it's like when you pivot, when you play netball. I used to play netball at school. You're on one toe, you know, pivoting. Yeah. And you're going around sort of looking, and then you go, oh, okay, I'm going to. And sometimes you have to wait for it. And other people are kind of going, we're going to do this. And you go, okay, I'll see you tomorrow. I'm not coming. I'm going to hang here for a bit.
Yes.
But that is quite hard. It is quite a hard thing to do. And I think, you know, if you're trying to do it as a beginner, I would say just go with your passion. If you find something really aesthetically amazing, like, you know, you found a hill and you know the sun's going to set over there, and you just make sure you get there in time to set up for it,
mm-hmm.
and just get that wow picture, then the next day, you know, maybe you shoot the breakfast in the hotel and you start thinking about, what is it about this place that's kind of different from where I'm, you know, what I usually experience. I don't know. It's difficult to sort of know what's coming.
Right.
But if you research, if you look at other people's photos, and then if you stay agile, I think that gives you a greater possibility. And when you're first beginning, I think shoot locally. Don't go to the ends of the earth and have 3 days and think you're going to get a really good story. You're probably not. But if you go just outside of where you are, or you've got a long time in one place, you're going to find something. And if you can go back later, that's why being local is quite good. So if you're in the States and you've got, you know, the next town, you start researching, things are happening. If you know that there's an event coming up or an anniversary, you know, there's going to be something really fun happening.
Mm-hmm.
So like people like me are always thinking, oh, we'll go to New Orleans for the Mardi Gras. We're going to, if people live near there, you know, they've got it and they can sell it to publications in other countries that would find that exciting. It's not all, you don't always have to travel to be a travel photographer.
Ah.
And that's happened during the pandemic too. The magazines here are going to Australian photographers and they're going to Americans because nobody could go anywhere. So
sure.
Which is a pain for me, but you know, it's been a
No, I get that. That's a really cool thought, that we can be travel photographers to other people, even though this is where we live. One of the things that I struggle with, which is kind of what we are talking about here, you know, coming up with that plan, you know, knowing what it is that we want to shoot, having an idea, coming up with that plan, but then also being open enough, being free enough to allow for things to kind of develop organically and then follow that. Do you have, this is probably the worst question I've ever asked, do you have some sort of, you know, decision tree on which photo should be more planned versus which photos should be more organic?
No, I think that's a good question. I mean, I think if you have your map of what you think you're going to photograph and how it would work, and there's a variety of vertical and horizontal shots, close-ups, you know, long shots, etc., like you would make a film,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're going to zoom in and zoom out, etc., and tell a story, and you have that as a column on your shot list, on your plan, And then you have the next column, which is things that might relate to that. Mm-hmm. So when you start getting inspired, if you were to add to your shortlist and go, well, actually, if I go this way with this story, this is more about this, the farm to plate story or the coffee bean to the coffee cup. Mm-hmm. But maybe you talk to a guy and he's got a really amazing backstory. Like I met a guy in the Faroe Islands who was just a really nice older man outside a church. And he told me that he'd written a book, which, you know, sounded interesting. And I found out that he'd written the first Faroese to Faroese dictionary, and he stopped the language being lost because Danish and English were sort of, you know, subsuming.
Wow.
And then I went back and I interviewed him for BBC Travel, and I filmed him and I filmed his family, and I found out about Faroese culture and the importance of language. So that was a chance meeting when I was doing a different job. So sometimes you have to go back, which is why if it's not too far from where you live, it's easier.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to wait a whole year to go back somewhere because it's a festival. But I do think that I have a notebook and, you know, I have a lot of ideas now. I think the more you do it, the more you kind of start seeing the angles. Although sometimes you have a really great story and someone else has already thought of it, or they've been commissioned to do it, and you pitch it to your magazine and they're like, oh, we've got someone going out. So, you know, all the things that you know are coming next year, or the festivals that repeat, and European capital of culture, those kind of things, mm-hmm. they make good travel pages in the newspapers, but people kind of start to think, oh yeah, I could do that. And so you've got to be quick.
I see. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So that's why being somewhere and being inspired is great, because no one else is there when you're there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if someone tells you something and you're listening, you've got first dibs on that as a story.
Yeah.
And the other thing I'd say is that the more you do it, the more you learn how to curate a story. And it's what you send to the photo editor that is going to get you commissioned if you're working on spec as a beginner. So I tend to lay it out like a photo story if I don't know the editor, and I'll say, look, I've just done this, I've got this really good idea, I've just been to Chile, I've got this idea for this, and blah, blah, here's some sample photos, but I'll make it look like their magazine. So I'll lay it out, DPS, vertical with some text, a few little, you know, montage-y thing. And that gives them an idea of what I've got, but it also makes them think, oh yeah, I can see that in our magazine. So I think that's always worth doing if you've got the time.
Yeah, that's another fantastic idea right there that I think anybody can do, even with their own photos, just even if they're not commissioned or anything, just be able to think to yourself, how can I rearrange these photos to be able to tell some sort of cohesive story and get more out of them, because I think oftentimes as photographers, we're taught, like, try to tell the whole story in just one photo. And while that's great advice for certain things, some stories require more than just one photo. I think each photo does tell a story, but maybe it's a smaller version of the bigger story, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know where I was going with that, but thinking about photos and thinking about traveling, I know that, you know, just because a photo is technically a travel photo doesn't inherently make that photo good, right? Just because it's photographed somewhere else. What elements do you look for to know that the photograph that you're going to be able to take is going to stand on its own?
I guess the things that I always think about, if they're going to stand alone, they're usually the ones that would open the story, or the ones you might enter for a competition or a professional award. So, like, I just entered something which is only for professional photographers in this country. And you don't pick all your work. You just pick the things that you think stand on their own mm-hmm. as good photographs. And so sometimes the ones that photo editors choose to be part of the story are not your favourites, but you can see where they fit. They're like a little sort of link in the chain. So the ones that, for me, that, you know, really stand alone, like you say, they can tell a story by themselves. There's enough going on. I guess it captures the place. If it could be a photo that was taken anywhere in the world, then why would it be part of the story on Turkey or, you know, France or something? Mm-hmm. It has to have some kind of element of the place or the culture of the story of the place that you're telling. So it's difficult. I mean, I see so many different types of photography, and I can see why all of it is interesting. But I guess it has to capture your attention and it has to have something in it that draws you in. It's not just obvious on first sight. And maybe it's the play of light and shade, or the, you know, the sort of the dynamic of the colour palette, or the gaze of the person, if it's a portrait, that kind of thing. And something that's a little bit different to what you've seen before. There's a lot of replication in travel photography. I think once somebody wins an award, you see a lot of people the next year doing the same kind of photo.
Sure.
And I can see, because it's flattering,
it's
isn't
proven,
it? Somebody,
yeah,
and you're kind of learning your craft as well. If you're an amateur or an enthusiast, you're kind of thinking, oh, I want to take a picture like that. And so you enter it. So there's a little bit of originality, a little bit of just, I don't know, perfect lighting, or not necessarily technical perfection, but you kind of, you're looking for that. But sometimes it doesn't, I see things that are not technically perfect, but they work. But I know there's a big thing, people like to sort of get your photo now on the phone and enlarge it and go, oh, you know, is it sharp enough? And it's,
right. You
know, you never had that with film photography. And in a way, I think something's been lost because people are so caught up with making sure that, and then they lose the sense of what it is they're photographing, I think, sometimes. And it doesn't really feel, it doesn't kind of feed the soul. It's just technically a nice photo, but a little bit average in the power it has on the viewer. I don't know. So it's hard, isn't it? It's like all art. How do you measure if it's good?
Yeah. Well,
it's in the eye of the beholder, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That being said, then let me ask you, because you have the eyes of the beholder in this case. When you go on Instagram or Facebook or whatever, and you see maybe a friend or a family member post photos from maybe a recent trip of theirs, what are those elements that those photos are missing that a professional photographer would have paid more attention to and captured?
I think it's always about the light. When I see kind of nice family pictures, although actually people using their mobile phones now, they're getting technically really nice photographs. But if you're talking about somebody kind of with a kind of not a mobile phone, but maybe they're trying to take good pictures, but they're snapping, usually it's a composition and the lighting. So they haven't really sort of framed it as well as, you know, you might have done if you really thought about it. It's taken quickly, which maybe makes it a little bit blurry. They haven't used a tripod. And, you know, landscape photos, you have to use some kind of neutral density filter if you're going to try and do something interesting with maybe moving water. So something like, I keep showing this because it's in front of me, but...
Yes.
You know, if you want to blur the water, you can't just photograph that on a slow shutter without overexposing the sky. And so that's kind of what a beginner photographer won't necessarily know how to do or have the equipment to do. So yeah, it's those three things, I think.
Mm. And having some sort of, like, it sounds like what you're saying is having some sort of intention for how the photo is going to turn out, right? And then those are just the technical aspects of it, the light, the composition.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I guess if you're a professional, you've thought about that, haven't you? And if you take it and you check it and it's not quite right, you'll take another one.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you're on the hoof and you're just having fun, you don't really bother. You're just snapping. And maybe then you go back and look and go, oh, it's out of focus. Oh, we're too late now. We've moved on. You know?
Right, yeah. You know, and when you're on a trip, when you are traveling, sometimes that happens because you're just wrapped up in, you know, whatever's going on.
And that's great.
Yeah.
I don't lose the experience to get the amazing photo, I would say. It was always a balance between, you know, traveling and being, having a human experience. Although obviously if you're being paid to work and you don't get the shot, then the human experience will be bad when you get home.
Yeah, you always want to think about that human experience, whether it's going to be good or bad. Yeah, I get that.
Absolutely.
Nora, I think, you know, we're coming to the end of our time here. I think it's just impossible to cover everything that is related to travel photography in one, you know, 1 hour long podcast. So I know that listeners will be able to check out your book. But before, you know, we get into that and let them know where they can find that, is there anything maybe that I didn't ask you today that you think is really important for new photographers to understand about travel photography and taking photos that really mean something?
Yeah, I mean, I think find a story that means something to you. So a place that, you know, culturally is your background, or an activity, you know, if you're into horses and you go to rodeos and stuff, if you know about animals and you hang around them and they're comfortable with you, find the thing that you love. Most people have got this one type of photography. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people in my book, there's a photographer called Polly, who's a street photographer, and she does so much stuff in London. I like street photography, but it's not filling me with passion. Mm-hmm. So for me, being on my own in low light by the ocean, it's kind of or on the top of a mountain, not in any danger, obviously, but somewhere really sort of dramatic or really beautiful. And then follow that sort of and perfect it. So find out how to be a kind of really adept portrait photographer. Learn about that style if that's what you love, people and taking portraits. And then move on to the next one. If you're trying to do everything, especially on one trip, if you try to cover everything, you'll be chasing your tail and you'll never really get probably anything that's really amazing. You'll get lots of quite nice things. So don't be kind of tempted to do everything. And in your shot list, maybe you're going to enter a portrait photography competition and you know some guys that, I don't know, mending fishing nets down on the coast, and they know you, hang around with them and follow them and keep going back. That's what I would say. That's how you start, and you can enter some kind of portfolio and people will sort of take notice. You don't have to be good at everything to start with. Mm. You just take it one genre at a time. Yeah.
You don't have to be perfect at everything to start with. That is, that's going to be a memorable quote from this one for sure. It is.
Yay!
It was good. There's many of them that I've written down, but that one is fantastic. I know that it can be difficult for new photographers who, you know, they see the camera as a way to capture all of these different things. And it can, but it's great to, you know, hear from you say, you know, if you really follow what you love and you do that, you're going to get the best results because you're going to be interested in that. So thank you so much for sharing that. I know that, again, a lot of photographers are going to want to know more about you and more about travel photography. So can you share with them where they can learn more about you and obviously your book as well?
Yes, so the book is published by Brat Guides. And so on their website, so Brat, it can be purchased from there, but also it's on Amazon. If you Google me, I'm Nora I. Gemmell Travel on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And my website is also in just in my name as well. So you can find me in all those iterations. And you can contact me as well if you've got questions. And I'm doing quite a few talks in the UK at the moment. I haven't made it over to the States, but that'll be the next thing, I hope. So message me if you've got questions about it. But hopefully, I think for beginning photographers, this book is kind of ideal. That's how I wrote it, with those kind of really passionate early photographers in mind. And a few of my friends have told me that their children love it. So it's kind of, I've been a teacher for a long time, and sort of it really sort of works with teenagers as well, that are kind of just coming into, I want to do something with my camera. And it's hopefully written quite it's quite an immersive read, I think. It isn't technical, and there's lots of poetry in it. So hopefully if you have a look at that, everything I've said is kind of in there. It's distilled, it's sort of 10 years of working and probably over 20 years of doing it. And all the things people have said to me over the years, it's kind of fed into. So there's kind of a lot there. Somebody read it and said to me, oh, it's got a lot of content. And I was like, yeah, that was the intention.
Oh, that is too funny. As if as if you were just going to write a book
with just a few photos and some big words.
Exactly. You know, hosting a podcast can be difficult sometimes, not in the sense of compared to somebody who, you know, say works in a factory or is a firefighter or something like that. But it's difficult in the sense that you have such a short amount of time with somebody who has so much knowledge about a specific topic that at times it can be, you know, difficult to contain all that within an hour long interview and try to keep things on track. But my biggest takeaway from this interview with Norai is, you know, if you want a photo, you have to go get it. You have to go get it. Like she said, you know, if you want a great sunset photo, well, you can't be having dinner with the folks at sunset every single night of your trip. You need to be out. You need to be creating amazing images. If you are traveling for a short amount of time, make your time count by getting out and by shooting. And I think that, you know, in photography, when I first started in photography, one thing that I wanted was like, okay, but like, what's the trick? Like, what's the, you know, what's the, I don't know, the acronym that you can use to boil down how to know what to do in a certain situation under these conditions and, you know, so that you'll always be prepared. And it does not exist. It does not exist. We want the easy answer in photography. We want the shortcut to getting to where we want to be. But there's no better answer than just getting out and doing. You know, in fitness, let's take the world of fitness, specifically weight loss. If you want to lose weight, you can read blog posts about it. You can read books about it. You can read, you know, weight loss cookbooks about the whole thing. But if you don't actually do what the books say, nothing is going to change. And in photography, it's very similar. You can learn and you can know photography without taking any photos, but it's not until you actually go out and you actually shoot that things are going to change for you. So while travel photography, there's lots of things that you want to know and how to get the best of this and, you know, make the best time and prep for, you know, all of these things, all of that is great information that you can learn, but it's not going to mean anything unless you actually go out and do that thing. So please, if you are listening, stop this. Just go out right now and go do the thing. Just go shoot. Just go take your camera out and just go take a photo. That's it. Now, this has been, you know, especially topical, I guess, for us is, you know, the summer, our family has been on a few trips. Like most families, you know, in the summer, I think, especially with young kids. We went out. We spent time with my mom. We've spent time with my wife's family. Lots of friends. And in doing so, it's like I just end up taking a number of photos. Well, we all know that one of the best parts about photography is not so much taking the photo or editing the photo, but it's sharing the photo with others. And my favorite way to share photos with not only friends and family, but also with my professional photography clients is with CloudSpot, where you can seamlessly create beautiful image galleries that are easy to share and use. It's even easy for my mom to download photos of her and the kids. So if you have photos that you have taken over the summer, maybe a trip with loved ones and friends that you have seen, and you need to share those photos, and you don't want to add confusion with hidden folders and access permissions in Google Drive or Dropbox, then just head over to deliverphotos.com and sign up for a free CloudSpot account right now and get 10 gigabytes of storage included. Free. Again, grab your free CloudSpot account today over at deliverphotos.com. That is it for this week. Remember, the more that you shoot today, the better you will be tomorrow. So go out and shoot. All right, talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoy the show, consider leaving a review in iTunes. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.